Unlock your Bible. Discover the true meaning of life. Learn the cause of world problems and the astounding solution. Prove for yourself what the future holds. In the Trumpet Literature Library, you will find answers to life's most important questions. Explore these vital titles on Trumpet Bookshelf.
Welcome to Trumpet Bookshelf. I'm Grant Turgeon. We're broadcasting to you live this morning from the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus here in Edmond, Oklahoma. How do you want to be remembered? Notice this verse in Hebrews 11, verse 4. By faith, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts. And by it, he being dead, yet speaks. That's Hebrews 11, verse 4. You know the story, probably, of Abel and Cain, how they both brought offerings before God. That story is in the book of Genesis in the Bible. Abel brought the very best of his herds and sacrificed them to God. And Cain brought some of his crops, but God could tell that he wasn't offering willingly like he should have, not offering the highest quality like he should have. So God was happy with Abel's offering, and he was upset by Cain's offering. Cain became angry at Abel. He didn't take God's correction and become humble from it. He didn't apply it. He didn't look at himself and blame himself. He immediately compared himself to Abel and blamed Abel as the reason why God was mad at him. And of course, that led to Cain murdering his own brother. This is the first ever human murder. But Abel's reputation long outlived him. To this day, about 6,000 years later, we can still read about Abel in the Bible. His example speaks to us today. And as this verse here says, it's all because of faith. Hebrews 11 also gives the definition of faith. Hebrews 11, verse 1 says, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." So faith is something that precedes possession. It means you believe, you know for an absolute fact that something will happen or you will receive something before there's any physical evidence to believe that. You have that example of Noah with the ark, building that ark for 100 years in the middle of dry land, nowhere near any water. It wasn't a rainy area. And you had people just coming by every day to look at the circus. Look at this crazy old man who's building an ark out here in the middle of nowhere. What is he doing? And yet, he was proven right. He simply believed that God would send the flood, just like God said he would. And he kept working every day, knowing by faith, without seeing any physical evidence of a flood, that the flood would one day come. That's the kind of faith that God knows we can have today. That's the kind of faith that we can inject into our own lives. In fact, we must do it. We absolutely must have this kind of faith, because as verse 6 of Hebrews 11 says, without faith, it is impossible to please God. Don't we all want to try to please God? If we're endeavoring to be Christian, following Christ, then of course we want to please God. But we have to have faith to do it. This is the kind of faith that can move mountains, can help us hurdle any obstacle in our paths. And it's the kind of faith we need when dealing or when taking correction. Correction is something that naturally we all dread. No one wakes up in the morning and says, well, you know what? I hope I get corrected today. I hope the moment I walk into work, I get blasted by my boss. No one thinks that way. It's not natural to want correction. Yet, correction is a blessing. God says that he only corrects his sons. And those who are not corrected by God anymore are considered bastards. You can see that in Hebrews chapter 13. Correction is a good thing. Correction is something we all need, especially as we aim to become perfect like our Father in heaven is perfect. Matthew 5 verse 48. But a lot of the time, correction is absolutely tied to faith. It becomes extremely difficult to take correction when we don't have any faith. For example, God has a government structure within his church, the Philadelphia Church of God. And you would really be shocked if you knew how many people became bitter and left the church and now think, well, Pastor General Gerald Fleury is definitely God's man, and he is certainly speaking on God's behalf, and he's full of love and humility. But all those ministers around him, they don't know what they're talking about. Every single minister who has dealt with me has been completely wrong. But of course, if Mr. Fleury came and told me the exact same thing in person, then I would believe it. That's the type of attitude you wouldn't believe how common it is. There's this idea that somehow Mr. Fleury doesn't know what is going on within the ministry. There's this idea that somehow the ministers are chosen not by God, but by a man who is being deceived by those ministers. And that is not the case at all. God carefully, painstakingly selects the men who are going to serve him in those roles. And yes, all ministers are human. All of us, not just the ministers, make mistakes and we sin and we fall down, we fall short. But that doesn't negate God's selection of those ministers. It doesn't cancel out the occasional correction that they must give. We can't have this mindset that, well, you're trying to correct me on this issue, but I'm going to guess you're probably not perfect in this area, so who are you to speak to me about it? That's the type of mindset that we see from really the youngest of ages, right? From being 4 or 5 years old, and another adult besides our parents tries to correct us. Probably a lot of us have said, well, you're not my dad. You can't tell me what to do. How did that work out when you tried that when you were younger? How did your parents react to you telling other adults that? Well, they said, you have to listen to all adults, not just your parents. Obviously, the same principle applies throughout life, submitting to those in authority, obeying our teachers at school, our bosses at work, obeying the heads of any activities in which we participate, just because they are not one or two specific human beings from whom we think we can take correction, doesn't mean their correction is irrelevant to us. It's this, we have to have this understanding of the office, whether it is a minister or a teacher or a boss or a parent or an adult, an elder, someone who knows more, has more experience, even a peer sometimes. Oftentimes our peers see us and know us better than everyone else. And of course, they would know what we might need help with. Do we have the humility to take correction from those who are younger than us? What about correction from those who hate us? Now, of course, those who hate us probably shouldn't have authority over us, unless it's in a rare, less than ideal circumstance. But there's this principle that even in a joke, there is something serious being said. There is some truth in it. Even in an insult, even if someone just flies off and rages at you, there could be some truth in it to take away. Rather than getting defensive and rejecting all of the points, rather than critiquing the way in which the correction was delivered, we can just take a step back, examine it, pray about it, and see what parts we can apply. See how maybe there was some truth to it. God warns very strongly about letting bitterness into our lives. The late educator and theologian Herbert W. Armstrong said that becoming bitter is a more difficult habit to break than heroin. The addictive drug of heroin. Becoming bitter is far more dangerous than that, and far harder to break away from. But bitterness is the common result when we do not accept and apply correction quickly enough. When we just let that correction stew in our minds for weeks, continually trying to convince ourselves that all of the correction was invalid, well, that's when the bitterness starts to build. But we do need to have faith, especially within God's government structure, especially with the ministry and the deacons and other authority figures. We can't just see the man. We have to see the office, and we have to have that respect. Faith has everything to do with correction. And like I mentioned, God only corrects his sons. Sure, correction isn't pleasant, even if it's delivered absolutely perfectly. The absolute Goldilocks way, we want that correction packaged. With a lot of tact, so gentle that we didn't even know it was correction until we think about it later that night. But that's obviously a daydream. Correction is not going to be delivered softly, like a teardrop or a pillow, every single time. Yet, God still expects us to accept it. God openly admits that he scourges and chastens his children. Those aren't very pleasant words. Those are not concepts that we get giddy and excited to think about. Christ was scourged in his crucifixion. If you just think about the physical version of a scourging, anciently, the Romans would torture their crucifixion victims basically to the brink of death by whipping them with hard whips that were embedded with all kinds of sharp objects like bones and glass that would grip into the flesh and the bones and then tear it away from the body. That's a physical scourging. And a lot of the times when God is scourging us spiritually, it can feel pretty painful. But at least it's not that physical form. At least there's a purpose behind it. We have to have faith to understand that purpose. We have to know absolutely what the future holds if we're going to joyfully accept correction. This is such a crucial, vital subject, especially because it is the main reason why so many people are no longer in God's church today. An inability to accept correction, having faith that God is speaking through his ministers when they give us counsel. When we refuse to believe that anything we do could possibly be wrong, how can God possibly work with us anymore? In chapter 5 of his book, the book of Hebrews, What Jesus Christ is Doing Today, Mr. Gerald Fleury writes, "Our greatest blessing is being corrected by our Father." And like I mentioned, it can come in many different forms. Obviously, through God's one man on this earth, but also through all the ministers, also through any authority figures in our lives, or through our peers, or through those who don't like us very much. And we can always take some element of good from all of it. I think this is a pretty good time of year to be speaking about this subject too, with the Passover coming up at the beginning of next month. It's really just about exactly a month away now. And we try to think about Christ, the sacrificial lamb, on that night. And we realize how Christ was harshly corrected, even though he did absolutely nothing wrong. The Bible does talk about times where maybe in those specific instances, we were completely in the right, absolutely didn't deserve correction in any way in those specific scenarios. And yet, the Bible does say that we are rewarded when we bear that correction with a good attitude. And we all know these things do tend to even out. There are a lot of times we get away with certain things, and then punishment comes around when we least expect it, when we weren't getting away with anything, we think. So sometimes we don't get punished when we should have. Maybe other times we do get punished when we thought we were doing a lot better, but it does even out. There have been some really great stories that I've heard over the years of people just quietly bearing the correction and not justifying themselves. And it really does work out well whenever that happens, when people just take it and move on without getting bitter, without being defensive, without just trying to get revenge on that person. We have to remember that God's correction does yield the peaceable fruit of righteousness, especially in the rare occasions where we didn't deserve punishment at all. And believe me, that is very rare. Because even when we do the right thing sometimes, it's possible to do the right things for the wrong reasons or with the wrong mentality or motive. To make sure that our thoughts, words, and actions are completely in line with God's law is very difficult. So when we do get punished, there's probably a great chance that in at least one of those areas, we were at least a little bit off. I would really encourage all of you listeners to go back into this book, the book of Hebrews, What Jesus Christ is Doing Today. It's available to you for free at thetrumpet.com. And chapter 5 is titled, Embrace Your Father's Correction. Mr. Gerald Fleury gets into his personal experience in more detail than we've ever heard. How he was corrected pretty strongly when, if you just looked at the physical details of his life, he was actually doing a pretty good job. He was having a pretty solid life, but was being challenged on why he wasn't doing more. And look where he is today. Here's someone who can honestly tell you that every single time he's been corrected by one of God's ministers, it has been a blessing. Again, even if the correction isn't delivered perfectly, even if those ministers later were not loyally serving God, but while God was using them, they were able to give some pretty useful correction. We have to have faith that God is speaking through those men. That when they do correct, it is full of love. That's kind of the mindset, I think, that would really help us. If we thought about correction as being something where it's a step, these are steps to take us where we want to go. Correction is not being just trying to push us in the other direction. Loving correction is where they're trying to help us take steps to our end destination, where we want to go. I know years ago there was an example of someone who has been out of God's church for decades, but he still was blaming God's church for everything that is wrong with his life about 40 years later. Now, for one thing, the obvious rebuttal to that is maybe if you were still around, you wouldn't be having all these problems to this day. But there was one example that was given where he said, well, the church prevented me from getting married. Now, think about this. He got married in God's church. And the only thing he was asked to do first was to get baptized. Baptism was just a step in the direction he wanted to go to get married. So when a minister steps in and says, wait just a moment, let's get this part right before we move on to the final phase, he's not trying to push you away from where you want to go. He's trying to help you get there. And when you get baptized, it means that you're putting God first in your life. You have that right foundation for a marriage that will last. It is not a deterrent. It's not trying to take you away from good things. Correction pushes you toward good things if you are willing to take it. But here's an example of someone saying he was prevented from getting married. Meanwhile, he actually got married inside the church. No one prevented him from doing that. How easy is it to get into a wrong mindset? Well, these people are just out to get me, and they just want to hold me back. They don't want me to achieve the good things I'm trying to achieve. We have to step back. We have to see the big picture and understand, especially when the correction is coming from the ministers, that they're helping us go in the right direction. They're figuratively holding our hands and walking with us to the end destination, if we will let them. We do have to have this humility and this faith to accept correction. And how much happier we will be. Look where Mr. Fleury is today, because he thought of all correction as a blessing. That's a powerful example to us, an example we definitely need to strive to follow every day. Thanks so much for listening today. You can get your free copy of the Book of Hebrews, What Jesus Christ is Doing Today, for free, like I said, at thetrumpet.com. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Trumpet Bookshelf.
You've been listening to Trumpet Bookshelf.